And we are back with episode 360 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and Coulson, you had me at Travis McGee.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I have to say flying cars are cool.
This is Bronson from Australia, and sorry, I couldn't help myself. I think there's a bulb out or something.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, next season, can we please bring in Shaw en route? Please? As regulars? Anyone? No? Okay. All right. Yeah, we have some big shows to talk about here, so we're going to get to it very quickly. But first, Edmund, I think there's something that you have to do to declassify this information.
Absolutely. We will be discussing all of the secret things that went on. So you will be horribly spoiled, and the machine might want to have a talk with you once after you've heard all this. So luckily, it's been about a week or so, so maybe it's moved on to something else.
That's right. And, well, let's go ahead and press this little button and inject what we need to, and we're going to run the promo for the series premiere of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Here you go.
The Battle of New York was the end of the world. This is the new world.
I am a soldier's angel through the eyes of a soldier through the...
What were you after?
The truth.
World peace.
I'm a soldier's angel.
You've got 100 men at your disposal. And now...
A hand-picked team.
In a war of words between worlds.
And yes... They're that good.
No one walks away from this battle.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the new TV series, premieres Tuesday, September 24th on ABC.
All right, and let's go ahead and do the recap real quick here as soon as my computer decides to scroll. There we go. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. Oh, come on, Joss, you couldn't have said welcome to the helicarrier? Anyhow... Agent Phil Coulson assembles a team to investigate extraordinary people and events around the world in this action-adventure series. In the premiere, the team goes after a man who has gained unusual and potentially dangerous powers. Well, I think that the big question everybody had on their mind was, are they going to be able to take the Marvel Cinematic Universe and scale it down sufficiently for it to be viable on TV, yet still feel like it's part of the whole? And, well... Let's start with you, Gary. What'd you think?
I liked it. It was some of what I was expecting, a little bit of what I wasn't, and there were some things that I was hoping for that didn't quite pop up. I thought they did a good job. You know, in some sense, this is the aftermath of the Avengers movie, and you sort of see the repercussions of aliens trying to conquer the world, and now there's crap to deal with afterwards. And, you know, the heroes won't always be there for the little stuff, and S.H.I.E.L.D. is meant to fill that void. I thought they gave a sort of good idea of a sense of them, that they're still not really known yet, but now they're having to be because they do have to do these higher profile cases now that you know, all crap's broken loose and there's tons of alien technology as well as superheroes, which aren't necessarily related to alien technology, but are also coming to the forefront, although we didn't see that during this specific episode. I liked it a lot. The only thing that I have a concern about, at least in this pilot, was this did not feel like S.H.I.E.L.D. It felt more like Coulson and his amazing friends. And while I think Clark Gregg does a great job in this character and stole the show for this pilot, that, I think, for me, was a problem. I really did not feel that enough of the other characters got any real type of development to sort of make me care about them. And sort of what I think a pilot should do is should give me enough on these characters that I want to come back next week and see them. You know, as I said, Coulson was great, and I would go back probably another episode or two to go see him. But there's only so much I can see Coulson smile and want to watch it every single week. My wife made a little bit of a comment as she was watching this with me, and she said, "Oh, it's going to be sort of like Warehouse 13." And I can sort of see the cross reference if it continues to sort of be this power slash villain of the week type format, but hopefully Josh is going to break out of that pretty quickly. I'm hoping that's just something to hook people in with a sort of standard and then blow it open from there, or at least I can hope it is. I enjoyed seeing, as I said with my tag at the beginning, I enjoyed seeing Lola, the flying car. Flying cars have been a tradition pretty much in S.H.I.E.L.D. since they came out in the early 60s, so it was a really nice sort of throwback to the comic books to actually see a car like Nick Fury would ride in the comic books, you know, go ahead and pop the wheels down and start flying around. So that was very enjoyable. I was, as I said, I was sort of let down with the supporting cast. They felt very stereotypical, and I wanted more depth. I felt they did a great storyline with the villain, almost too good. I felt like I understood and cared more about the villain of the story than I did the team. And for a pilot, I don't think that's the way it should be.
The oddity that I had with this, and first of all, you know, I think we can all acknowledge this was a pilot, right? I mean, we know that it's going to be exposition heavy, that there's a lot of cast members that need to be introduced. What I found kind of strange was, well, first I'll go with the good, right? The thing that I really did like about it was that you had this connection to Iron Man 3. That was really nice. I did not see that coming. I liked the fact that you kind of had mystery right off the bat in terms of what was going on with Coulson and everything else, but they didn't feel the need to try to explain it right away. They just kind of have the multi-layered story to everything. I felt like this was almost like they've had some comics in the past where they had these kind of sub-teams that they focused on, and I felt like that was where they were going with this. What I think they need to improve, and I'm eager to see the next few episodes because that's going to be really the telling factor. I do think that some of the cast is just really sketchy right now. The one that comes to mind is Sky. Very much a typical Joss character, but the line delivery was a little sloppy for me, and that took a little bit away from it. But that could just be the actress getting her, you know, her head around the character. That's fine. Some of the jokes, the humor didn't quite work. There were some that were absolute groaners, in fact. And I think they're still working out how to scale the effects. Unfortunately, the opening sequence really did not look very good. There have been shows on Sci-Fi that I think have pulled off effects better than that. And, I can't really say that I'm surprised because they are trying to be very ambitious with this, but it just really didn't look very convincing. It definitely felt like they were trying to bite off more than they could chew. So those are kind of like my top items, and then my bottom items, I guess you could say, my cons. But oh yeah, seeing the flying car at the end, I kind of had to fist pump. That was definitely harkening back to the classic era. Go ahead.
I was hoping that they'd have the entrance via barbershop chair the way they did in the movie, comic book series. But you know, it's young. The season's early yet. I'm hoping they throw that little nod in somewhere along the line too.
Bronstum, how about you? What are your thoughts on this, based on what we've said so far? Anyway,
the comment that I keep going back to that I've heard said about the show is that this is basically. This is the Zeppo episode of Buffy as a TV series. And for those who are listening who maybe don't remember that episode, it was in the third season of Buffy. And it was an episode that centered entirely on Xander, while the whole rest of the cast were doing this big, epic thing. Like they were literally fighting for their lives to save the world. Everyone except Xander, who kind of had to deal with like a stolen car and a couple of zombies... and some stuff that was like fairly the kind of problems that Buffy would have dealt with in the teaser, Xander had to spend the entire episode dealing with. But had he not sort of really come through in a clinch, it would have been bad for everyone. And so I sort of had that in mind as I went into this episode, and it sort of helped me manage my expectations. I was always hoping for a good show, but I knew that like you said, this was a pilot. It was going to be. A bit sketchy. Was going to be more concerned with introducing the characters and the premise and maybe setting up some story arcs than necessarily being an episode in its own right. But I think they did a good job of setting up a team of characters who, what they do is important, even if it's not necessarily as important as what, say, Iron Man and Captain America and Thor get up to. And I went really enjoying the episode. It wasn't perfect. There was some, most of the characters still feel a lot more like archetypes than actual characters. And I think Sky and Agent Ward are the two that are kind of hit hardest by this. They feel very much like cutouts, like slightly too perfect TV characters. And hopefully they'll get some development as the show goes on. But I don't know, things like that. My initial problems with it were really swayed by kind of getting the characters that we were a bit more familiar with back. Like seeing Coulson again was awesome. He's just Clark Gregg is great at turning on a dime from being very stoically funny to very stoically serious to very stoically badass. And it was nice to have Maria Hill back. It adds a nice bit of sense of continuity to the whole thing. I think Ming-Na had the best of all the new characters. I think Ming-Na had the best introduction. Like, I felt like there was,
ooh, yeah.
I'm putting that down to the actress, because I think the writing for the character was as sort of one dimensional as it was for a lot of the others. But the actress kind of brought a quality to the role. Like I felt like that there was already something going on under the surface, whereas with the others, it's more like I'm waiting for them to start introducing something like that. You had, cool action scenes. You had I really liked we're gonna have to think of Fitzsimmons. I thought they were a good double team, very, very entertaining. I think, J. August Richards had a good guest role. I liked the way that kind of turned from being how, I don't know, like how someone gets powers and wants to do the right thing can kind of be twisted, and in that sense turns around on sort of justifying why S.H.I.E.L.D. really actually does need to step in these kinds of situations, because it is so easy for them to spiral out of control. It's not the perfect pilot. I wouldn't even say it's a brilliant pilot, but the plotting and what characters they do have and stuff like that, it all ties into one another very, very well, and it got me keen to see what comes next. And on top of that, you just had all these nice little Whedon-y flourishes, like Coulson's big dramatic entrance, or particular turns of phrase and bits of dialogue that I really enjoyed. Yeah, it was. I thought it was a really solid first episode, and it did the most important job, which was it made me keen to see more.
Mm. Edmund, I know you've been waiting with bated breath. Yeah. You've been.
Well, I mean, I actually am in agreement with a lot of what everyone said. I definitely got that sense of this is a team that has its, they were just getting introduced, and we really don't have enough of a sense of them. And but certainly given the pedigree of past shows, I mean, I will be shocked if those characters don't start getting better drawn as we go along. We'll have to just keep our fingers crossed about whether it's how much is writing and how much is acting. And I actually found it a little, I mean, the whole thing with Sky, just sort of just aside from the characterization, I just found it kind of odd that the way they're sort of introducing her as one of the terrorists, and then seems rather easily turned into one of the team. But just kind of seemed strangely done. And certainly, I mean, in terms of what the villains sort of coming off more sympathetically. I mean, I think a lot of that was that basically, I mean, they had the villain carrying the weight at the end there. I actually loved the way they were using the mural in Union Station as almost like a commentary on the action. through that sequence. But basically, it's the villain who they have, or the supposed villain, who winds up delivering the speech that lays out their reason for existence, and that, you know, his exchange with Coulson, finding out their gods and we're just men, and we're what they step on, I think was the phrase he had. But I think that was just a question of getting through this introductory phase, and I certainly completely agree with Bronze Thumb that I'm very, very interested to see where they go from here. And also, since nobody else has mentioned it, one of my little squee moments was seeing Ron Glass walk in. So it's nice to see Reverend Book up and about again.
With shorter hair.
I think the Marvel universe is going to become the place where Dan Whedon characters get to live again. It's like the Flash sideways from Lost.
That's right.
Because you had Alexis Denisoff in the Avengers. You've got Coulson and Book here. Gunn didn't die, but he showed up as well. So I'm just waiting to see who else turns up.
I think Alan Tudyk may be waiting by his phone. So.
But then he'll re-die, and then what happens to him?
I'm waiting for us to find out that
he'll wind up in a place. He'll wind up in a hellish place that of pain and suffering that we can't imagine. Revolution.
Now I'm just waiting for them to say that Person of Interest takes place in the same universe, so that Fred therefore has been resurrected as well. But anyway. Let's see, Edmund, what would you give this one, do you think?
My hesitation is basically I'm trying to decide between a 7 and an 8, and I think I had enough things that I really enjoyed that I will actually go for the 8.
I settled in on an 8 pretty quickly after the show, and I just want to echo what you were saying, Bronstam, about Ming-Na and her character. First of all, I kind of love her anyway, and she always seems to bring value to whatever character she's playing. It's always good when she steps out and onto the screen, and I think that she is, along with Coulson, her character is grounding this team in a very nice way, which allows the newer, more green members of the cast to have something to bounce off of as they learn as they kind of get their feet beneath them anyway. So I would go with an 8 as well. That seemed like the right place. I know that there are some people out there that would love to hear me say 9 or 10, but 8's a good place for a pilot, guys. Like I said, I usually default to a 6 on a pilot. For me to go up to an above average pilot, that's saying a lot. Gary, how about you?
Gosh, I'm actually going to drop it down to a 7. I realize it's a pilot, so I am trying to cushion it just a little bit, given what they have to do to, push a pilot forward. But the lack of development of at least of any real development for me, even of Ming-Na's character, she's the driver. She's the driver. What the heck? Yeah. Anyway, it was, I know it's a tease and we'll probably get some real origin story from her down a few episodes down the road, but it still felt like the universe was very flawed, that if I did not see the Avengers and I walked into this movie, pilot, I would have felt completely lost. I would have felt lost and had a sense of what was going on at all. And a pilot, especially a pilot, should be able to stand on its own. That's why you make it, to have it be the beachhead and the establishment for the series to go forward. And I felt it was lacking a little bit. There were still a lot of good points, and I am a diehard S.H.I.E.L.D. fan. I have been for a long, long time, so I have high hopes for this as well. But it was a little disappointing with the character development, so I'm going to go stay with the 7.
Okay, and Brunstam. And Brunstam. Bronstone.
Oh, metal encrusted digits.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, I think he's left in protest or something. But at any rate, I'm sure he's just lagged. All right. Well, Gary, I think you have to bow out. So, since you are not among those who follow the machine, or
I do not hear the machine's voice in my head. No,
that's right. Nor do you hunt down Heisenberg. So. All right, we'll bid you adieu until the next episode.
Okay, guys, take care.
Yep. All right. Well, while we're waiting for the communications with Australia to be reestablished, there must have been a problem on the helicarrier again. Yeah. Anyway, you know, every single time they let the Hulk back up there, things go wrong. We're going to go ahead then and jump into Person of Interest. And here's the promo.
The machine that stops crime before it happens is missing.
Where is it?
I already set the machine free.
Their worst enemy is locked away.
Escort our patient to solitary confinement.
No contact with anything electronic.
It's not good for me to be separated from it.
But on Tuesday, September 24th...
I'm sorry. Are you guys closed?
The danger is just beginning.
You're welcome.
You're pretty handy with that thing.
New night.
Everything all right?
I think we're gonna need backup.
New allies.
In the future, you might try to complete your assignments without so much violence.
Near a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
New lives to save.
They never say thank you.
Maybe if you found a way to save them before all hell breaks loose.
Never a dull moment with you guys.
Let's go! Person of Interest, season premiere, on its new night and time, Tuesday, September 24th.
All right, and let's see what we have here. Person of Interest, Season 3, Episode 1, Liberty. The third season opens as the machine, still missing but now completely self-governed, resumes providing irrelevant numbers for people who will be involved in violent crimes, starting with a U.S. naval officer who's in New York for Fleet Week. Elsewhere, Carter goes after the corrupt police organization HR and Root tests the boundaries of the asylum. Oh, does she ever. All right, Edmund, yeah. I know you've been waiting for the opportunity. Take it away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, this was an interesting episode. I mean, it's kind of appropriate discussing it right after discussing the S.H.I.E.L.D. pilot, because they shook things up so much at the end of last season, you know, as opposed to between the first and the second season, where it was, you know, basically cliffhanger and then, you know, wrap up the story. This actually felt a little bit like a, you know, kind of a new pilot. I enjoyed it a lot, but I kind of felt like, you know, no, there was this whole thing of, you know, no, having to juggle all of these balls and, you know, reset everybody's situation between, you know, Carter being you know, demoted down to a uniformed officer again, and as they mentioned, Root in the asylum, and then, of course, the new team of Sean Fusco, allowing them to actually take care of two cases at once in a suitably awesome gun shooty way in both cases. I did like the sort of, it's become sort of the person of interest trope of Reese finding his way into the kidnap van, and then we just see the shots ringing out in the van from the outside, so just you know, leaving it to our imagination, you know, and then of course we get our more standard gunplay with Shaw and the Amish bearded Fusco,
yes.
You know, as kind of become standard for them as well. I mean, there is this thing of where, you know, they'll tend to open up the season, I think, sort of anticipating, you know, as they've gotten more popular, you know, more people will be jumping in, you know, so they have, you know, more, you know, the more standard standalone-y cases with the mythology thrown in around the edges, and then you know, presumably we'll once again be getting back to, you know, yeah, more mythology driven arcs as we get to the end of the season. But you know, because to a certain extent, I mean, the case of the week is pretty standard. You know, there was the sort of the you know, because they're dealing with Fleet Week and him being a sailor, you know, sort of being able to get to, you know, have the villains be the special ops team. So it certainly, of course, you know, plays right into Shaw's and Reese's wheelhouse in terms of being able to anticipate the moves. Certainly, what's going on on the outskirts, kind of the story, is, you know, was really the most interesting. I mean, Carter keeping Elias under wraps, keeping him bottled up as their own little private resource, was very intriguing. And also, you know, the discovery, you know, when he offers to take out HR for her, and you know, she politely declines, you know, since that gets confirmed at the end, you know, that's something she's working on doing herself. And I actually like there was a wonderful little detail where when they are in the speakeasy and the sailor who approaches her, of course, does bear quite a resemblance to the dead Cal. So I thought that was a nice little touch. And of course, then the other huge thing was was rooted in the asylum, and you know where it's now gotten to the point where you know, especially with the machine more autonomous, it's becoming really essential to basically if you can watch this on a DVR so you can pause when
especially the machine's at the end, right?
Someone at the beginning, when he's Root is being sort of reintroduced, but then at the end, once she's finished toying with Dr. Carmichael, and that string of possibilities spools out, including at the very end, at I believe 2.9%, that one of the directions could lead to global thermonuclear war.
Yes, well, it's a nice
little nod to War Games.
It's a small percentage, at least. Now, Bronstam, are you actually back in communication?
10-4.
Okay, so the machine let you back in. Before you get started on your comments for this, what was your score for S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. I sort of teetered between the 7 and 8, but I there was just enough that I liked and enough good potential that, yeah, I feel like it deserves a pretty solid mark.
Very good. All right, and so I'm sure that you heard enough of Edmund's commentary. Other than just how awesome Shaw was in this episode, what else did you think about this to add to Edmund's commentary?
I knew going in that this episode was not going to be like the season 2 premiere. That one was picking up on a cliffhanger and very much about continuing that particular story. This one was, it was what I expected in the sense of it was about getting
Here we go again, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, apparently Root did not want to hear any type of criticism of this episode, so I'll just jump in there. I mean, other than the fact that, again, I love the introduction of Shaw and Root as regulars. I really, really enjoy Shaw as a character. I love the fact that you've got a character that can match Finch in terms, or not Finch, but I'm blanking all of a sudden.
Reese,
thank you. In terms of sheer awesomeness and just badassery, she actually might be beating him out if we have a little bit of a contest starting with this episode, seeing who can outdo each other. But then Root, I mean, Amy Acker just did an amazing job with the performance and made her even more creepy, even as she became that much more interesting of a character. I love it when you've got a character that feels completely justified in everything that she is doing, yet is so utterly unpredictable because she's so insane. It's just so fun. Many so's. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just want to mention that. Yeah, I mean that moment when she says, that she's a little afraid. I'm just sitting here, sitting there quaking. Like, oh, if you're afraid, I'm very, very afraid.
That's right. Bronstam, did you manage to get back in? Maybe.
Hope so.
Okay, so pick up where you left off, I guess, or somewhere around there.
So this was. It was what I expected in terms of storyline. This was an episode that was going to be, let's just deal with a. Yeah, spend most of the episode just dealing with a number. Let's go through the procedure. But also, as they're doing that, just to use that as an opportunity to show how the new characters kind of fit into the dynamic of the team and the show. We had sort of, figuring out where Shaw fits into it was the obvious one. And it's good to have kind of another Reese around, albeit one that's got this attitude of like, now can I kill him? No, now can I kill him? No, now can I kill him? No. What sort of surprised me, because in the midst of all the things that happened at the end of last season, I was really not expecting the Carter stuff to go the way it was. The idea of her being a uniformed police officer and her little deal with Elias, and then sort of finding out at the end that she's planning to kind of go vigilante on her own, was it's a good direction to take the character. It's really interesting. It sort of goes. It's a good evolution from where she began the show as just like being so very straight laced and so very trusting in the law, as opposed to, you know, and thinking that a vigilante is not going to help. And now she's sort of seen that with so many breaks in the system that you know, Reese and Finch have really become this force for good in New York City over the course of the show, and she's having to go down the same path in order to get any real justice. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes. And yeah, like you were saying, the stuff with the brute is just. It's just so watchable. It's so good. I'm so glad that Amy Acker is going to be in the show more often, because she's got such a great brand of homicidal, psychopathic, crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm just even the fact that like there wasn't really any action going on in her scenes. It was just her having conversations with a psychiatrist and talking about the machine is God and stuff like that. And it's just, it all came down to the writing and the performance and this very simple minimalist direction. And it was just creepy and awesome and fantastic. And then on top of that, you had, you know, some fun kneecapping action going on.
This is true.
With a pretty solid, number of the week storyline going on. It was nothing particularly spectacular, but it wasn't meant to be. It was the end to see what the show is going to be like going forward. And yeah. I like what the show is. If this is what the show is going to be like going forward, I'm in. I'm you know, this is awesome. This is Person of Interest continuing to be just a really fantastic TV show.
Yeah, I agree. This was definitely functional. It was kind of like a reboot of the series, but in a way that was completely natural in terms of the evolution. And yeah, all the things that I was looking for the premiere. I gave this one an 8. Now, Edmund, how about you? I know for you, this is kind of like, you know, Gary and Covert Affairs. He starts at a 10 and works his way down, but...
I'm actually at an 8 myself because, you know, yeah, I felt, you know, yeah, this was, you know, this wasn't like a full-blown pilot, but it was sort of having to throw a bunch of stuff at us. And, you know, I think it did do it well. And, But I'm kind of looking, you know, this is one of those cases where, no, it's not defaulting to a 10. It's just knowing that this was set up and it's just going to keep getting better. So I need to leave them room.
And Bronson?
Yeah, I think the 8 is a good number. It's, it was a really strong episode. It was doing a lot of heavy lifting, in terms of developing the characters and the mythology. Just around a really, really simple, by the numbers, but still interesting case of the week. So, yeah, I'm happy with that. 8.
Very cool. All right, well, we are going to go ahead then and move on to our third and final topic, and that is going to be the penultimate episode of Breaking Bad. And here's the promo. Mm-hmm.
There are only 2 episodes left of AMC's Breaking Bad.
You worried about your wife and kids.
If they don't have you, they're going after her. There are 2 DEA agents missing, presumed dead. How much time have you got left?
For more exclusive video, go to AMC.com.
All right, and let me just go ahead and get this started. Oh, yes, the wonderful...
AMC at it again.
That's right. Breaking Bad Season 5, Episode 15, Granite State. Events set in motion long ago move toward a conclusion. Yes. So,
if you think
so
AMC
many
is bad,
spoilers.
If you think AMC is bad, you should be listening to the Vince Gilligan teasers that he does on Talking Bad. His tease for this episode was literally, Walt gets a new pair of glasses. Now, that said, if you had been watching the show and obviously paying attention and stuff like that, you heard that and thought, oh my goodness, oh, because of course this is, we've seen Walt with his new glasses in the flash forwards, and so we kind of realized it's like, yeah. Oh, this is about stitching together the period of time between Ozymandias and the flash forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And it did a very admirable job of doing so. I was surprised that we picked up immediately, relatively soon after Ozymandias, because there was such a finality to the way Walt left at the end of that episode that I wasn't expecting to have the stuff with Saul, and not to mention a really good one episode one performance from Robert Forster as just this very no nonsense straight laced, Heisenberg's keeper. But yeah, this was about the real. If the previous episode was about the unraveling of Heisenberg's empire, this episode was about the unraveling of Heisenberg himself, at least for the most part it is, because just everything that we've come to expect from Walt and his Heisenberg persona, as you know, in terms of problem solving, this he'll use money and intimidation, he'll try and outthink people, he'll be bold and impulsive while still intelligent and stuff like that. All of those qualities are just stripped away one by one. He can't threaten Saul. He can't buy off the vacuum guy whose name I'm completely blanking on. And
I'm not sure we ever got it, actually. Yeah.
I just feel bad calling him the vacuum guy. but yeah, he just and it's just so the real. For the most of this episode, the real emblematic moment was where you see him sort of left alone in that cabin for the first time. He goes through his stuff and he pulls out the Heisenberg hat, and it's this really intense moment where you just see him sort of unfold it, put it on his head, do that thing he always does where he kind of straightens it out, and you think, okay, Heisenberg is back. We're gonna see him do something. We're gonna see him do something impressive. And what he does is he walks to the front gate, looks out, and thinks, tomorrow. Not going to do it now. Yeah. It's a bit too cold, stuff like that, tomorrow. And it's just the wind is that's when the wind is entirely let out of him. Because as we keep seeing over the course of the episode, he's just more and more, rubbish, really. And it's not just the cancer, although the cancer is obviously like a really good physical representation. He has to cobble together like this almost homemade chemotherapy set to get by and whatnot. So we can see him sort of getting physically ill, but the whole situation is taking this mental toll on him. He's becoming the shell, and it's just. It continues to play at the really inherently interesting contradiction of Breaking Bad. The idea of the protagonist is absolutely fascinating and can elicit our sympathies and be understandable in his motivations, while at the same time being this complete monster of a human being. Mm-hmm. It's always been an incredibly fascinating, awesome part of the show, and that sympathy part is really in play here. To go back to one of our favorite shows, what it reminds me of is back in the last season of Lost, where some very deliberately they very deliberately passed out some of the episodes in the latter season to do with the making you understand the man in black. They have him do something really, really horrific and bad in one episode so that by the end of it, you just hate him. And then in the next episode, you see this tragic backstory and you're incredibly sympathetic and you're just like, well, of course he wants to kill a bunch of people. It's so sad. It's so tragic and whatnot. And just that kind of creating this really, that really interesting duality and Breaking Bad in these two episodes is really, done that. Last episode, I came out of it just absolutely hating Walt. I still find him out, he's still his fascinating protagonist, and I really want to see what happens next to him and what happens, but it's out of this sense of like, I'm just hoping he gets it. I'm hoping that something karmic comes along and bites him in the butt. And then to go from that to this episode where he just spends most of it seeming so pathetic and downtrodden that, I don't know, maybe that, I guess to, in a sense that is the karmic hell he's earned, to just be forgotten and pathetic and useless and alone. And it's really, and then that final nail in the coffin towards the end of the episode of, he really well, says it in that conversation with Junior, it can't all have been for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's Walter's been a guy for the longest time who's thought the ends justify the means. That's been his justification. So what happens to the person who believes that when suddenly they can't achieve the, those ends? Those ends are out of reach, and you've just gone through all of those means for nothing.
Yeah, no, I found this a fascinating episode. I mean, especially after sort of all that intensity of the showdowns in the desert and things falling apart, sort of more from the practical and police standpoint, to then go to this episode where you kind of expected there's going to have to be an episode that was sort of taking a step back from that, but then at the same time, I mean, to wind up having it be, still, this fascinating study of, the final, what seems to be the final dissolution of Heisenberg, and certainly, I had that same reaction when he pulls out the hat, and he's got the barrel of, $11 million or whatever it is at this point. Even though, of course, Robert Forster, I guess we could call him the repair man, might be better, is warned him about, not going anywhere, and you just think he's going to march into town then and start messing things up. And then instead it's just seeing, seeing the slow crumbling, and I loved how they set up the thing of, no, he's going to be back every month, so we know at least, it's two visits, so at least 2 months have passed. And to the point of, the lovely touch of, both in terms of showing how far he's gone, he's deteriorated physically, and also just as the symbol of the family falling apart when his wedding ring falls off, I thought was a beautifully done moment. Certainly you stick Bryan Cranston and Robert Forster in a room together and just let them go at it, that really, does feel like the focal point of the episode. I mean, what's going on back in Albuquerque was, just as devastating in its own way. Todd, who has just become this, he's kind of the antithesis to Walter White, because he just really is straight psycho crazy, and with no holds barred about it, but in this sort of, this pleasant, seemingly all American exterior, especially when he's meeting with Lydia, and seems to be almost emulating Walter White in look with his button down and chinos and, then going to, just the Jesse's latest circle of hell. I think he's on about the ninth or tenth circle at this point. When Jesse manages to pull off his daring do escape, but of course gets caught and suffers the consequence with that chillingly matter of fact assassination of Andrea by Todd, of course. It was an episode where, it was a bit of a setup episode, but still maintained the intensity, even just having a guy sitting in a cabin. And then, talking about, expected Walter to march into town early on, and then when it finally happens, and trying to get the money to Junior, and sort of the, I mean, I'd put it as the twin nails in the coffin of the call to Junior going horribly wrong. As anyone except for Walter would probably expect. But then also that lovely bit of the Schwartzes, who we haven't, in Grey Matter, which we haven't heard from in quite some time.
We've also had the stuff with Jesse going on, which
I was just detailing some of that. Saying that I think Jesse is on about the 10th circle of hell at this point. I love that bit, that device of having the Schwartzes on Charlie Rose of all things, basically washing all traces of Walter White out of the company, and that sort of being the twin triggers that set him off to on that journey that we saw in the flash forwards.
So, does that pretty much cover it? I have no idea.
I think so, yes.
Okay. That said, Bronstein, what would you give this one, do you think? Beginning with the fact that Henry gave this one a 9 out of 10. Did he disappear again? Damn it. All right, Edmund, what did you give it?
Yeah, no, I'll go with the 9 as well. It as I mentioned, it was a bit of a step back from the intensity of the last two, but still, just brilliant performances and still an amazing hour of television and certainly has us all looking forward to Sunday. So 9 for this one, and I'm fully expecting a series finale that lives up to the title next week. So,
Well, I'm going to assume then that Bronstein would probably fall right in line with that, as he has with it's been very consistent all season long since the show returned. As far as everybody pretty much being in lockstep, so unless he has something to say right now, I don't see him in the group anyway. So there you go. All right, so it looks like we have one more episode of Breaking Bad before everything wraps up. Yep. You guys are, going to be mourning it out.
Absolutely. Except, now that this is definitely one where once it's all over, I actually haven't, AMC is running this huge marathon of all the episodes leading up to it, but I actually have not been watching them because I want to, keep the current flow clear in my head, but this is one that's definitely going to be worth the rewatch, and going back to see how it all started once you know where they wound up. So I'll be looking forward to that once it's over.
Hey, if that's Bronstein, before we wrap this one up, what would you give Breaking Bad episode? What score?
I would give it a 9 out of 10.
There you go.
It deliberately lacked in the intensity of the previous one. It did a masterful job of unraveling the character of Walter White. At the same time, it did have these really intense moments. What happened with Andrea and Jesse was horrific. And it all built to this moment of just that final scene where I am both sure of what is going to happen next and completely in the dark. And that was wonderful. So yeah, 9 of 10.
Very cool. All right. Well, next time we're going to have a few quick hits and then go into a bit of a roundtable. So who knows what we're going to talk about? I'm just going to predict off the top of my head that there's going to be discussion on Grand Theft Auto 5. No idea how I'm getting that impression. I just think that's going to happen. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Misuse of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...